persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. As you might expect, the conspiracy theories are swirling around the sudden, unexpected death of Supreme Court Justice Scalia. We will dig into that today. And of course, the primary race of particular concern to us, conservatives, is the selection of the GOP nominee. Although Bolshevik Bernie is rattling harried Hillary, reducing her to nervous coughing spasms, and so there's some interesting things going on there, but more and more it's coming down to Trump and Cruz. Although Rubio continues to be a player, while Kasich, Jeb, and Carson are appearing more like hangers-on at this point, South Carolina will shake off a few more. My guess is Carson is next to drop out. Rumors about Jeb dropping out actually are percolating. Super Tuesday is super expensive. Something like 15 states and territories are in play, and candidates, especially in a race like what we're seeing unfold here, will be compelled to spend heavily. My point is, these guys have got to have a very substantial war chest going into Super Tuesday, and early wins position them to garner the lion's share of donor support. Of course, Trump is supposedly self-financed, and the fact is he receives donations, and actually he's loaning his campaign his money. And Jeb has the GOP establishment coffers opened to him. Rubio is playing hard to present himself as a team player with the Gopher Aristos, so they'll likely keep him afloat as long as he remains viable. But another fumble like New Hampshire, and he's over. The issue for Jeb is whether he wants to continue taking the beating he's receiving, coming in behind Rubio over and over again. But I think Kasich and Carson are likely to fall out of the race after South Carolina, and I'll miss Carson. He's a good man. One thing we'll discuss is what is becoming increasingly clear. New evidence dug up by Beck providing proof of something I brought out very early on, and that is the Dems are rooting for Trump to get the GOP nod, and the GOP Aristos want Jeb, would settle for Rubio, and if neither of these, it seems they want every current candidate to stay in the race in order to divide up the GOP delegates sufficiently to justify a brokered nomination. At least that's the rumor that's floating around out there. Is Trump connected to the mob? Good night. Is he bashing GW and smiling at Planned Parenthood to garner South Carolina crossover votes in an open primary? You know what that means, right? The open primary? It means Democrats can vote in the GOP primary. So you've got Democrats picking the GOP nominee. Oh, and is Cruz a member of the Masonic Lodge? Okay, enough for the opening. It's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
All right, we'll be looking at the race for the White House, and I'll give my comments on the Scalia death and its implications in the second segment. Let's start with the front runner ducking Donald Trump. The guy who's never voted in a Republican primary, by the way. Yeah, that's right. Ducking Donald ducks the primaries. And his political affiliation has flipped around like a landed mackerel. I mean, he's been registered Republican and independent and something else. What was that? Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. He ran for president on the Reform Party ticket, a party that's self-avowed centrist, fiscal moderates, by the way, social issues neutral, which basically means they're progressive. This guy has switched parties four times in the last 16 years. Now, he's either as confused as a termite in a yo-yo in the hands of a toddler, people do switch party affiliations. I've done it. My dad did it. I mean, many of us have done that. It's just that one wonders, you know, if you cannot define Trump by party affiliation, then all that is left is his party associations. Who are the people he has endorsed and supported over the years? I mean, you are who you hang with, right? Something everyone knows and understands until it comes to religion or politics for some reason. We go brain dead. In 2009, he enthusiastically endorsed Obama. Now, what does that tell you about which way his political compass points? And by the way, when Obama White becomes a buzz expression for Trump, remember, you heard it here first. months ago. He has for years beat the drum for Hillary, saying, you know, stuff like, you know, they're friends, by the way. She's a really terrific woman, he said. And he said, she's a really brilliant person, he said. And he said, she did a great job as senator for New York. And he, by the way, praised Obama's pick of Hillary for Secretary of State, said she'd do a great job. Now, this all by itself ought to tell you what sort of president he would be. Think about it. Would he pick someone like Hillary for Secretary of State? With her political worldview, her scandal-ridden career, and I mean even before Benghazi, there was Whitewatergate, right? You know, the missing files came along before the missing emails. But the point right now is, what does this tell you about the direction his political compass points? If you ask me to listen to what he is saying now about the important border issue and ignore everything else he is saying and what he has said or has done before, well, hey, isn't that exactly what we did with Obama? I mean, we as a nation, not me personally. You understand? We're watching the same phenomenon unfold before our eyes. Obama white. People emotionally charged by his rhetoric about the important border issue and not listening to what he's telling us he's going to do. I mean, recently, for example, he said right out loud in front of God and everybody that he supports the Obamacare mandates. Now, if all of this does not cause you pause concerning his judgment and his ability to read character, for heaven's sake, his ability to assemble a first-tier team, get a load of this. Donald Trump said Pelosi is a, quote, really impressive person, end quote. Yeah, you know, Miss Gotta Pass the Law before we can read it. Ducking Donald Trump, however, had no good thing to say about Condoleezza Rice. He bashed Bush constantly, GW, and said, Hugo Chavez, remember old sulfur breath Chavez, late president of Venezuela, the man who, before the UN, snidely insinuated that our president of the United States was Satan? Trump said Hugo was, quote, a lot smarter than Bush, end quote. Check the man's compass. It points due progressive. Trump supporters, confronted with this, always explained to me that Trump did all of that as a businessman, garnering favor with political people important to his business agenda. And after an awkward pause, during which I'm staring into their dull eyes, waiting for the illumination of at least a spark of intelligence, if not a bit of conscience, I say, uh-huh, exactly. That's who Trump is. You nailed it. And he's engaged in a business negotiation with America right now. He'll say and do whatever he's got to do to land the deal, which in his case is to land him in the White House. How do you trust a man like that? And in what way is that any different than the wheeler-dealer politician that those who support Trump despise? No difference at all. He is the quintessential politician. And even if you take what he is saying right now, he is progressive. I mean, in balance, you balance out all he's saying. It all weighs heavy on the progressive side. The one issue that Trump has used to galvanize an emotionally charged following is the border issue and immigration generally. That and his willingness to speak off script and say outlandish things, emotionally charged rhetoric that sets fires all about him. But I've been warning you about this, and I warn you again. It's strategic. It keeps attention diverted from his record. But listen, let's get quiet just a moment and listen. Trump said he wants government health care. Did you hear me? He has actually said it repeatedly. He wants to repeal and replace Obamacare, replace it with a fully nationalized health care system. Hillary, Bernie, and Trump are on the same page when it comes to national health care. Recently, Trump was cornered and admitted he favored the mandate. He favors the government intruding into your personal life and forcing you to buy health insurance. He is into the business of the government getting into your business. He said back in 1999, quote, if you can't take care of your sick and the country, forget it. It's all over. I mean, it's no good. So I'm very liberal when it comes to health care, Trump said. He said, I believe in universal health care. That's what Trump said. When asked if he believed it was an entitlement from birth, Trump said, quote, I think it is. It's an entitlement to this country. And too bad the world can't be, you know, in this country. But the fact is, it's an entitlement to this country if we're going to have a great country, end quote. He has said to us that he wants to make America great again. But he has said that if you want to be a great country, you have to have national health care. So, which is it? America has never had national health care. He thinks government is the answer, not free market. Something must be done about the health care in this country. That's absolutely true. It's ridiculously expensive for things that really it ought not to be so expensive for. And Obamacare has only made it more so. The answer is to free up competition in the healthcare industry and get the government out of the business of protecting the medical lobby from competition from other markets. Allow insurance providers to provide insurance across borders and in other ways get the government out of the way and let the free market work, and it will drive prices down to where people who need a colonoscopy won't pay $700 to $1,500 for a simple procedure that shouldn't cost more than $100. Mammograms, $50 tops. Give me a break. Preventative health care services can and should be made affordable to everyone, and this can be done by releasing free market forces. Get the government involved, and it becomes a mess. Government cannot be or play God. Anyway, Trump said he believes in using eminent domain to take property from private citizens to be given to some other private citizen, like him, for example. Remember Vera Cokeyne? He tried to take that dear widow's property from her by using the government to force her to give it up to him. What a creep! And you wonder why I call Trump supporters Trump's chumps? Trump supports Planned Parenthood. That's right. Even in the light of the facts that Planned Parenthood was complicit in trafficking in baby body parts. Without a flinch, Trump praises Planned Parenthood and vows to use your tax dollars to fund it. He fundamentally, in his core, believes in socialism, government involvement in matters in which the government has no business. Trump has boasted that he knows how to get along with the Democrats. Folks, isn't that exactly what has gotten us into the mess that we are in right now? Republicans who feel that in order to govern, they must get along with the Democrats? But never seem to notice that when it's the other way around, when the Dems are in power, well then, you know, you're supposed to do what they want because the people gave them the majority. When are you going to wake up? Not enough? Oh, I understand. I heard someone say Trump supporters are fact resistant. I chuckled because I thought, yeah, that's exactly right. That's what I've noticed. When it comes down to actually talking facts with Trump supporters, you know, about his past associations, his statements, they don't want to talk about that. Okay. How about this? To a reporter on CNN in 2004, quote, "In many cases, I probably identify more as a Democrat," he went on to explain, quote, "If you go back, it just seems that the economy does better under the Democrats than the Republicans," end quote. Trump supported Obama's bailouts, the stimulus package, all of it. He said he believes government can take over private business. But you're not hearing this. Why? If asked by a friendly Democrat, he'll admit it freely. If asked by a Republican or a conservative, he'll change the subject to try to avoid it. No one running for office right now is more political than Trump. No one. I'm going to go on record right now, and I'm going to say if Ducking Donald does become president, you watch. He will end up making a deal with the Dems on the border issue, and you'll be left weeping and wailing and gnashing your teeth. Finally, I don't trust Trump because he's a liar. Every time anyone, especially Cruz, calls him out on something he's on record for saying, his response is to cry, "Liar, liar, liar." And he never actually addresses the allegation. Rubio's doing the same thing, by the way. Cruz points to something Rubio has done or said, and Rubio cries, "Liar, liar." What is this? Answer the allegation already. I mean, it's getting to the place where I could not vote for Trump even if he is the nominee. Trump is a big, fat liar. By the way, I do that on purpose. I love tweaking the Trump supporters, you know, when they get some of their own. So when they come at me, I can say, you can dish it out, but you can't take it. And then, you see, I've got this all worked out. Then they say, okay, well, when did Trump lie? Gotcha. On October 18, 2015, yeah, now listen to this, it gets real interesting. Back in October, last year, a progressive blogger named Alan Clifton posted a blog under the title, quote, "Former GOP Senator blasts pathological liar Ted Cruz for constantly misleading Americans," end quote. That was the headline. Under that, there was a picture of Tom Coburn, a finger-waving senator who was frustrated with Cruz often. And beside that, this blogger wrote these words, quote, "I've made no secret of my total disdain for Senator Ted Cruz. He epitomizes everything that's wrong with the Republican Party. He is, without doubt, one of the most dishonest people in Washington and, in my opinion, a complete sociopath," end quote. Only someone highly motivated could conclude from this blog that it was a quotation of Tom Coburn and not a statement of opinion by the blogger. In any event, this exact quotation was circulated by Dan Scavino, longtime Trump advisor and director of social media for the Trump campaign, who apparently was sufficiently motivated to, when he saw this, attribute it to former Senator Tom Coburn. Trump retweeted this personally, and he attributed it to former Oklahoma GOP Senator Tom Coburn. In fact, Trump's tweet, quote, "Unreal!" exclamation point, "highly respected Senator Tom Coburn said this about Cruz." And then he gives Daniel Scavino's tweet, quote, "He is, without doubt, one of the most dishonest people in D.C., end quote. You know, Scavino had tagged his tweet with a reference to at Tom Coburn on Ted Cruz, which was included in Trump's tweet. And, of course, that suggests that the source was direct from Tom Coburn. Tom Coburn was asked about this and publicly denounced the whole thing as a fabrication. He said, quote, "It's an absolute fabrication. I've never said that, period," end quote. Coburn went on to respond, quote, "It's unfortunate he would use my name to say something dishonest. It's a total fabrication. To me, it's more of loose play with the truth and loose play with the words," end quote. Jake Tapper of CNN exposed the ruse. On the same day that Scavino sent out the tweet, Jake Tapper looked into it and then tweeted to Scavino after he discovered the truth, quote, "I see no quote from Coburn saying that," end quote. Later, Tapper took Trump to task for his own lie, noting how interesting it is that Trump would use this approach to make a point about Cruz's honesty. Trump's campaign purged the tweets right away, took down the fabricated quote attributed to Coburn. So all is well, right? Simply a mistake. An overenthusiastic Trump campaign advisor saw the blog and Coburn picture there and assumed it was a quote by Coburn. Innocent mistake. You know, sort of like the Cruz campaign jumping on the news from Carson's campaign that Carson was going to take a break from campaigning. But, of course, the Cruz thing was actually true. So that's a little bit different, I realize. But hey, why did not the Trump campaign check with Coburn before going with the story, right? Of course, right. However, not so fast. 2 hours after it all came out, after Coburn exposed it as a fabrication, after Tapper had revealed the truth about it, after the Trump campaign got word that it was a false report and then removed the tweets, Trump went on stage some hours later or longer in Beaufort, South Carolina, and repeated the lie again, pretending it was true. Trump, you are a big, fat liar. I must conclude this segment. It's already gone long. But all of this simply reinforces something I've been saying right along. This process is exposing the liars. Pay attention. The light's being shown on them, and God is blessing us and letting us see the truth about these guys. So you have no excuse going into the voting booth here. And the one screaming liar the loudest are the biggest liars of them all. Rubio and Trump, liars. And when a leader hearkens to lies, all his servants are wicked. Proverbs 29:12. Bible thump alert. If a ruler hearken to lies, all his servants are wicked. Now, to conclude, I was asked to look into an allegation whether Ted Cruz is a member of the Freemasons. The evidence given to me was, I'm looking at my time here. I've got to take a break. Sorry. I'll pick it up right here when I get back. I promise. No, I'm not dodging the question. Good night. I talked to people connected with the Cruz camp.
The science of a brain massage. The brain masseur uses words like fingers to massage your gray matter, forming insights in the mind that stimulate the pituitary to signal the adrenal to release noneparephrine neurotransmitters and to fire these neurons through the sympathetic nervous system affecting the heart. The skilled brain masseur uses incisive logic to arrest our attention and nuanced razor-sharp rhetoric to cut away the tangled knots in our brains. When these knots are removed, the electrical impulse of stimulating insights fire the neurotransmitters so they can leap the synapse gaps. This generates a sparkling effect in the brain that can cause the countenance of a brain massage listener to glow. Additionally, sudden outbursts of energy caused by the release of glucose throughout the body increases the heart rate, while the pituitary gland in the brain releases all five types of dopamine at once. And this creates that sense of euphoria experienced by many brain massage listeners. And that's the science of a brain massage. To say the brain massage show is thought-provoking is like saying the hydrogen bomb makes a lot of noise. Both true and both way understated. Stay tuned. Your brain is about to get a massage.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Okay, as I promised, let's address the Cruz as a Mason thing. The evidence given to me was that he salutes the flag with his hand under the lapel of his coat, and that is taken by these folks to be the hidden hand gesture used by Freemasons. Okay, up front. My friend and fellow pastor, Andy Wells, is working with the Cruz campaign, and he has connections to those nearest to Cruz and speaks in venues with Cruz and so on. And he's an honest man, a godly Christian, a friend that I admire and have known many years, somebody I trust. I called him about how things were going on the ground there in South Carolina, and I'll give you that update in a minute. But I asked him directly about this allegation that I heard that Cruz was a member of the Freemasons. He got back to me about an hour or so ago, and he said that he heard back from two of Cruz's closest advisors, and they said, absolutely not. They said no one in the upper levels of the campaign, including Cruz himself, has ever been a member of the lodge, and went further to say they never would be. Now, about the Mason thing. The fact is, after some research on this, I discovered that according to the Masons, only 14 of our presidents have actually been Freemasons. The assumption that so many others were Masons comes from various other connections to Masons that are incidental and do not actually confer on someone the honors of Freemasonry. So, you know, GW, Reagan, and many others that you probably assumed were Masons, in fact, were not. The second thing about Masonry you should know is that when George Washington was a Mason, and he was, by all accounts that I can find, it was not what it is today. Albert Pike in the late 1800s introduced that strange set of bizarre pagan and Satan-worshipping ideas and elements into Masonic ritual that make it entirely incompatible with Christian faith today. And the third thing to know about Freemasonry is that it is rather like many other odd cults. There are members associated with the group for political or business reasons, and a few really are, are what you would call ideological Masons who buy in to the whole worshiping Lucifer thing. Nevertheless, a Christian involved in this should know that is exactly what they're involved in. So, glad to report that Cruz is not involved in the Masonic Lodge. Now, to the Scalia death scandal. Scalia was a great jurist, and his passing is a loss that is felt deeply by all who value our constitutional republic. I've read many of his decisions and have always been impressed with the depth of his understanding of law and its application to a question, coupled with his clarity in his language. That is very refreshing. He is one of those rarities with a capacity for understanding obscure and complicated issues and yet able to articulate them clearly. He is certainly a great loss to all of us who have grown so weary of the activist justices presuming to arrogate themselves above God, above the Constitution, above millennia of common law understanding. He was a champion in our effort to hold on to the freedoms bequeathed to us by our founders. He was a friend of the Second Amendment, all the amendments, of course, and a friend of reason in the matter of same-sex marriage. His dissent in that matter will certainly provide a strong basis for revisiting that decision in the future. So, deeply disappointed. And frankly, his passing presents a challenge to our faith. I mean, no Christian I know has any wish for any liberal jurist to die, of course. Many of us are praying, however, for the wicked to be rooted out of our government, exercising the faith Jesus said would uproot a tree and cast it into the sea. And we understand his words are spirit and life, like John 6, and do not take them physically. So in other words, we're not praying the liberals on the court would die. We are praying they will be converted, their heart will be directed to the right and to the truth, and that the wicked influence on the court will be neutralized by the balance of the court going in favor of conservatives or by overwhelming public pressure toward impeachment or something like this if necessary. And anyway, so here we are praying this way, and then this news comes as a blow. It's the exact opposite of what we would be hoping for and praying about, and that is something I'm going to address this coming Sunday night, 6 p.m., for the Issachar Report, and I believe you'll be greatly helped to make sense of all of this. You know, the Bible says, all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. Even when evil falls upon us, we may look to God to bring some good of it. I don't believe God killed Justice Scalia, but he certainly allowed him to pass. I'll discuss the various conspiracy theories floating about out there in a moment, but the fact is Scalia is dead, and that is certainly an evil report, damaging, we think, to our worthy cause, and yet we believe God is able to bring good out of such evil things. This does not mean he accomplishes all of his good or any of his good in this way, only that because he is good, his response to the evil done in this world contrary to his will is good. For example, it's interesting, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. That's bad. And the wages of sin is death. That's bad. Well, what's God's response to this, the fact that all men have sinned? Well, here it is. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth on him should not perish but have everlasting life. Well, in the same way, we can expect that God will respond to our cries concerning this evil. He'll respond with good. And while I go into this more Sunday night, one thing is certainly true. In the wake of Scalia's passing, we are certainly made keenly aware of just how important is this election. We must have a president who will put honest, conservative, constitution as it was written jurists on that court. See how the court usurps the power today to shape our culture in the forms of wickedness. We need righteous jurists. The question before us is whether Obama will move forward with his plan to nominate a successor, or will he let the next president take care of that? Of course, that is a ridiculous question. President-elect Obama will never waste a perfectly good crisis such as this. He'll definitely move forward with a nomination. So the real question is, what will the Republican-controlled Senate do? Will the Senate use the power of the filibuster if necessary to block an appointment to the court? Obama is anticipating that. So he's come out with a statement admonishing the Senate that they should not interfere with his choices, that as president, it is his decision, and they should support it. Give this a listen of something he said a little while back.
We've almost gotten accustomed to how obstructionist the Senate's become when it comes to nominations. But that's not how the system's supposed to work. That's not how our democracy is supposed to work.
However, he has not always believed that way. In fact, he is on record saying that the advise and consent clause in the Constitution means more than merely to look at the intellect and character of the nominee, but that the philosophy and ideology of the candidate ought to be taken into consideration. And he said this in defense of his filibuster against a Bush nomination, that is Alito. And listen to this.
There are some who believe that the president, having won the election, should have complete authority to appoint his nominee, and the Senate should only examine whether or not the justice is intellectually capable and an all-around good guy. That once you get beyond intellect and personal character, there should be no further questions as to whether the judge should be confirmed. I disagree with this view. I believe firmly that the Constitution calls for the Senate to advise and consent. That includes an examination of a judge's philosophy, ideology, and record.
Well, now Obama comes out and apologizes for opposing Alito. Here's his argument. Look, Alito is in fact on the court, you know. I mean, my filibuster didn't stop him. So he says, so the same thing should happen here. You know, we should let enough senators vote against it to make a show of opposition, but ensure that enough senators vote for confirmation to secure confirmation of the appointment. That's what he's saying, basically. So here he goes again, you know, instructing the gopers how they can play along with the Dems and minimize their political damage. I'm so sick and tired of this. I can hardly hold my lunch. I'm done with this stuff already. But it does bring up a point. What would Trump do? What would Cruz do, for that matter? What would Babyface Rubio do? We know what Hillary and Bernie would do. Of course, they would skew the court as far left as possible. But our concern is Trump, Cruz, and Rubio, because it seems likely one of these men will take the Republican nomination. So consider Trump. Remember, he gets along with the Democrats. And how does he do that? Well, look at his record. He leans in their direction in so many ways and on so many issues, it's literally mind-blowing that so many conservatives are supporting this conservative. I mean, it's a testimony to the spiritual blindness that has fallen over the eyes of godless Americans. Blind guides leading the blind into the ditch of oppression. Wake up. Trump will wheel and deal, and he has enough affinity with the Dems that he would certainly compromise our interests. He's not strong with us in either abortion or gun rights. He's certainly not strong with us in property rights. What sort of judge do you suppose Trump would appoint? All right, because I want to conclude with Cruz, look at Rubio. We know for a fact that Rubio plays ball with the Aristos. Gang of Eight? Enough said. That young and ambitious man who will say anything to get elected, he'll go along with whatever the gopers want him to do. Well, we've seen it happen over and over ad nauseum. The gopers, they roll over on their backs like subservient dogs waiting to be petted by their democrat masters, who whip them into submission with threats of bad press if they don't do their bidding. Now, how about Cruz? Does anyone out there, I mean, whether you like him or not, does anyone out there think that he would choose anyone other than a rock-solid conservative and insist on his being placed on the court without compromise? No hands? You're right. All right, I went long in the first segment, so I've run out of my time here for this segment. But you be sure and come Sunday night at 6 p.m., and I'll be addressing this, the passing of Scalia, and doing a kind of memorial thing. And anyway, I think you're going to enjoy it. So you come Sunday night, 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. And you say lights on if you agree with what I'm saying, lights off if you disagree, or you can write me an email. Go to thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll find there a place to write me an email. If you're in a hurry when you call, just set lights on, lights off, and hang up. But if you will, please leave a message for me on our listener response hotline. I love to hear from my audience. The feedback is very helpful to me, and I appreciate it very much. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
Are you ready for a renewed experience of God with a fresh encounter this year? Or maybe you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. Get ready to encounter God and know that He is real. Go to SantaMariaLighthouse.org.